From our nation's capital, this is Naps Chat.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you.
Hi, and welcome to this week's edition of Naps Chat. I'm Bob Levy, the Director of Legislative and Political Affairs for the National Association of Postal Supervisors. This week, the Congress passed legislation to raise the so-called federal debt ceiling. This provides the federal government the authority to borrow money to pay its accumulated long-term debt. It is important to note that the national debt is different than a budget deficit, which is the annual difference between what the government collects in tax revenue and other payments and its annual expenses to pay for the government's services and tax reductions. The debt is an amalgamation of what the government owes to Americans, institutional entities, and in fact foreign governments who have loaned the government money to pay for accumulated expenses. If the Congress did not lift the cap on the amount of money the government could borrow, it would not have been able to pay its bills. As a result, retirement checks, including Civil Service retirement checks, Federal Employees Retirement Service checks, Social Security, and federal pay could have been frozen. Historically, when the government reaches the debt limit, it suspends the interest owed to such trust funds as the Civil Service Retirement Service and Disability Trust Fund, the reservoir of funds used to pay federal benefits for retirement. Once the debt limit is lifted, forgone interest is paid back into the fund. Just in case you want to know, the current federal debt is $28.4 trillion, that is trillion with a T, dollars. On an unrelated note, this week the Washington Post reported that a number of years ago the Postal Service secretly experimented with the development of mobile voting technology and applied for a patent on this technology. The mobile voting system was never deployed and was abandoned in 2019, that is prior to the 2020 election, in part because it was vulnerable to hacking and was insecure. Moreover, it appears that none of the federal agencies that are tasked with election security were ever brought into the loop. Ironically, absentee balloting via the United States mail remains one of the most secure, trusted, and effective means of voting. Finally, as I mentioned last week, a significant procedural speed bump seems to have been flattened that would permit a floor vote on H.R. 3076, the Postal Reform Act, in early 2022. Assuming that this is the plan, it is quite possible that the Senate will be having the opportunity to bring up the bill early in the spring, possibly around the time of LTS. Which brings us to this week's guest on Naps Chat. Naps Executive Vice President Chuck Mulledore. As Executive Vice President, Chuck will be presiding over the 2022 Legislative Training Seminar. Welcome to Naps Chat, Chuck.
Thank you, Bob. Great to be here.
Chuck, before we get to LTS, I want to remind our listeners of last week's guest, Naps Branch 51 President Butch Maynard of the United States Postal Police Force. We spoke about the essential protection that the Postal Police provide to postal personnel and property, as well as how H.R. 5587, the Postal Police Reform Act, could clarify the role of the police department. I understand that NAPS President Ivan Butz sent a letter to the Postmaster General about the issue. Would you be at liberty to discuss the content and intent of that letter?
Absolutely, and I really enjoyed Butch, his comments and his thoughts on the Postal Police and how valuable they are to the work of our organization and the Postal Service on an everyday basis. So legislation, we'll get back to that in a second, legislation 5587, which NAPS supports, was introduced by New York Congressman Andrew Gabarino to require that the Postal Service basically put its postal police officers back on the street to protect carriers, clerks, and other individuals, and especially in high-risk crime areas. So the background on that is in September of 2020, the Postal Service restricted its postal police officers to their domicile location. So they could not get out on the street, even to investigate a crime. They were no longer allowed out on the street to do those kind of basic investigatory activities, as well as protection of carrier routes, perhaps clerks closing retail units in high crime locations. These are all a valuable resource and a valuable service that the Postal Police provided. Now, Butch is a president of a NAPS branch 51 in New York, and we have quite a few of those individuals are NAPS members. So it was brought to our attention that this needed to be corrected. We checked into it, looked into it, talked to Butch and other officers up there in the Postal Police organizations, and we feel it was something that needed to be corrected. So on top of the legislation that was introduced, I even sent a letter to the Postmaster General requesting that that order of September of 2020 be removed so that Postal Police officers can get back to their traditional duties of being out on the street, investigating criminal activity involving assaults, threats against carriers, clerks. We've had several instances where postal employees have been murdered in the last 6 months or so. So we feel it's important that the postal police be allowed to return to their traditional duties of being out on the streets, being visible in the communities to help protect carriers and clerks and other postal employees in their normal duties on a day-to-day basis. And our people, our supervisors and managers are the ones that assign those duties to the postal police officers. And we think it's important that, you know, we get back to letting the postal police do what they do best, and that's protect postal employees in their line of duty.
Now, Chuck, last week we had the opportunity to meet with Congressman Gabarino, yep, the author of this legislation. Could you provide some insight into our conversation with him about and his support and the rationale behind the legislation?
Yeah, we had a good meeting with him, pretty much to talk about this issue and his support. He was quite shocked to find out that officers, postal police officers, were not allowed out of their domicile facility. So what that means is, let's say there's a plant where their postal police would be domiciled there. In the past, they could go out to investigate some criminal activity. They could go out on patrol. They could go out and check on a collection box, all these kind of things that they're no longer allowed to do. So they essentially can't leave the premises to go out and investigate criminal activity or protect carriers or clerks and so forth. So he was quite surprised that that had occurred. And after he had met with some of the postal police leadership and some of the leadership of our postal police supervisors and managers, he was happy to introduce that legislation to try to get that corrected because it just made sense to him and to all of us. In fact, the thinking behind that, we don't really know. We really can't understand. We've asked for the justification of that. We really don't know what the justification is for that. We do know that this puts more of a burden and an onus on the Postal Inspection Service to investigate these some 7,000 crimes that have been committed against postal employees over the last year. So it's a heavy lift, and we're happy to have Representative Gabarino's support in this effort.
A byproduct of this legislation, it gives us the opportunity to interact with a committee, a House of Representatives committee that we ordinarily don't have much dealings with. That's the House Judiciary Committee,
right,
which has jurisdiction over this legislation. And so we're talking with members of that committee in a more intimate way than we've had in the past.
Absolutely. I know you had a meeting with Representative Nadler, who's the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, just about this legislation. So trying to bring light to it, trying to educate, as we do so often on these issues, educate members of Congress as to the reason why they may see a bill like this and say, oh, okay, why is that important? Well, we're trying to stress, along with members of the committee especially, why this is such an important issue. And I think from our conversations, we're going to get some traction on this. I really do.
Also, it highlights the importance of the United States mail because it has its own police force to protect the mail and individuals conveying the mail.
Absolutely. And no one is saying that if we put postal police back on the streets that somehow crime will disappear. No, we're not saying that. But what we are saying is that that presence in some of these more difficult locations, not safe locations, is a diminishment, I believe, to some of this criminal activity. So I think that when we people in the community see the postal police out there, when they can respond much quicker than maybe local law enforcement can or postal inspectors can, it does make a difference. And I think this is an important issue. And we're going to keep supporting. We're going to keep pushing it in all of our meetings.
Now let's turn to the legislative training seminar.
Mm-hmm.
First, what's the date of the seminar this year?
next year, March 27th through 29th. At the normal location at the Crystal City Gateway Marriott in Arlington.
Now, the theme of this year's LTS is, quote, building a better tomorrow, promoting our legislative agenda in new ways.
Mm-hmm.
Could you talk about how you decided on this theme?
Well, we know that right now we have some definite challenges with meeting with representatives, senators on the Hill. So two things. COVID is still an issue. Was an issue last year. It's still an issue, as all of you well know, as well as issues resulting from the January 6th attack and riots up on the Capitol Hill. So the Congress for a long time was pretty well locked down. Well, now that's eased up somewhat now, where we can have meetings with some of our congressional leadership on the Hill. It's going to be more challenging this year at LTS to get meetings with members of Congress. So promoting the agenda in new and different ways is really what the theme of it all is, because we just can't charge the Hill like we did in years past. You know, we turned 500 people loose on Capitol Hill on Tuesday morning and Tuesday afternoon to meet with congressmen and staff and senators all across Capitol Hill. So probably won't be able to do that this year because of COVID issues, as well as issues surrounding the January 6th rioting and insurrection. So more challenging ways of doing things, but we're going to rise to the occasion. We're going to message out to everybody over the next few months as we get ready to come to LTS that we'll have ways of meeting with our people on the Hill or in other locations. The House and Senate are in session that week, so we'll be very likely to meet with congressmen and senators. So this is a definite bonus for us. And in those situations where we just don't have anybody coming from a particular district or we just don't have coverage, in years past, we could just send someone out to meet with Congressman Smith, for instance, and maybe nobody was there from his district and we could kind of set up a meeting with him. That might not be possible this year. So we're going to set up some interactive meetings at the hotel if necessary through some setup we'll have, do Zoom meetings with them and so forth if we just can't seem to get into them and meet with them any other way. So we've had to come up with some creative new ways of getting our message across, but we're going to get the message across.
Yeah, Chuck, as you just mentioned, both the House and the Senate will be in session during LTS this year. In fact, it was just on the 14th of December that the Senate released its calendar, which was this week. The House released its calendar 2 weeks ago, and that makes a difference for our interaction, as you just spoke. But this, when you talk about new ways of communicating to Congress, that has application for individual NAPS members who, for whatever reason, are unable to come to Washington. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. And we've always have, and we'll continue to support folks that want to meet with their congressional representatives in their home districts. I mean, the reality is that most congressmen and senators are in their home districts, in their home states, more than they're here. So there are greater opportunities to meet with them, to talk with them, to promote our legislative agenda to them individually in their home districts. And for those fundraisers and those meetings, we'll absolutely support that and try to help folks set those up. Beyond that, they can go on a LAPS legislative page. They can look at the issues that we have listed on there. They can send emails. As you know, they still prefer email versus hard copy mail. Can send emails on any of the individual particular issues that NAPS is supporting, such as H.R. 3076 or other bills that we're supporting, H.R. 5587 for the Postal Police. And we can individualize that to their own particular congressman or senator. So that's all available on the legislative homepage. They have drop-down menus, makes it very easy to do that. So even if you're one of the many, because we have 26,000 members and not everyone can come to LTS, for those of you that can't come to LTS, we can still have you legislatively involved in our agenda through meetings in the home districts, as well as sending emails in support of NAPS positions to your own particular congressman or senator.
Yes. And last month, you spearheaded a Zoom conference call with all of our state presidents and legislative chairs and the executive board, where we started to roll out how we're going to message this and communicate with our LTS delegates about preparing for LTS. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, and the idea was that we start laying the groundwork that folks understand that how we've done LTS in the past is not how we are going to be able to do it this year. And these are rules that are set down for us by the Sergeant-at-Arms of the House and the Senate. So there's a lot of individual discretion with members of Congress. So some may be more willing to meet in their office than others. Some may prefer to meet off-site, and we're going to work with those folks if that needs to happen. Some might prefer Zoom, so we're going to work with setting all of these particular things up. So, but the idea of sending everybody to the Hill to just go up there and meet with everyone is just not going to be feasible anymore. So the whole idea of the meeting was to just begin to lay the groundwork that, for the most part this time, most of our meetings with our congressmen and senators will be constituent-oriented. So if you're a constituent of Congressman Smith, easy to set up a meeting with Congressman Smith. It should go relatively smooth. If you're not a constituent of Congressman Smith, it may be much more difficult to set up a meeting with that individual. We'll work through those issues as we go along, but we feel it's really important, and we start messaging out now that's going to be a little bit different than we're normally accustomed to doing business on the LTS.
So as not to discourage anyone, you should just know that we polled all the congressional offices mm-hmm. and Senate offices, and we found that more than half of the House offices are currently meeting with constituents face-to-face, and that I'd say around two-thirds of the Senate already mm-hmm. is agreed to meet with delegates or constituents from their home state. So we're not in a shutdown mode.
Right. No, not by any means whatsoever. And again, depending upon the severity of COVID, how these new variants impact the health issues surrounding our country over the next several months will dictate a lot of that. So prayerfully hoping that, you know, we can see some ebbing of these COVID issues, and that will make things a little bit easier. But again, we have to be prepared for whatever we have out there, and we're trying to lay the groundwork that we're prepared and ready to go however it turns.
You referenced a little bit earlier H.R. 3076, mm-hmm. legislation that we've really been promoting, getting on the floor of the House of Representatives. Yeah. And as I mentioned at the outset, it is quite possible that H.R. 3076 will have passed the House by the time, God willing, we get to LTS. So H.R. 3076 or its Senate companion, S.1720, could be on the docket in the Senate at the time that we are coming to Washington for LTS. How could that possibly impact NAP's legislative messaging for LTS?
Well, let's just say we're hopeful on those things happening. We've got a good sense through the large number of meetings we've held with some key congressmen and senators on both of those bills, but primarily H.R. 3076, because that's the driver, right? That's the driver for the bill in the Senate. So nothing's going to happen until 3076 gets passed by the House. So we've met with both sides of the aisle, Republicans and Democrats, and we've got broad support for this. And we've been pushing along now. We've been joined by postal unions along with the other management association to finally start getting this thing across the finish line. So based on conversation we've had with key leadership in the House, we think we've got a very good shot to get this on the floor of the House in January. Fingers crossed. We're going to keep pushing as hard as we can till we get across the finish line. So if we get that done, the focus will shift to the Senate. And we've been meeting with Senator Peters and others on that staff, on that committee, to make sure that once H.R. 3076 passes the House, we can get S-1720 or whatever iteration it becomes on the floor of the Senate. And again, based on our conversation, we believe there's widespread support on a bipartisan basis for Democrats and Republicans to get behind this bill and get this thing passed. So we've been working hard on it, and we're going to keep working hard on it until they take the vote, and then and we'll hope that we can pat ourselves on the back and start working on the next one.
Let's move to the next one.
Right.
Assume now H.R. 3076 passes the House.
Right.
Then our priority in the House becomes H.R. 3077.
Correct.
How do we message that?
Well, that's going to require some education. So we'll be in the education mode because, as you know, we met with a congressman last week, and we were talking about H.R. 1623. And one of the provisions of that, H.R. 1623 and H.R. 1624, are part of H.R. 3077. So we explained that, look, we explained the process, how fact-finding worked. The last time we went through fact-finding with the Postal Service, and how at the end of the day, we went through a fair process as outlined by the law, and the law allowed the post office to just simply walk away from it at the end. And it's just not fair. And I think it was eye-opening for that congressman. I think he didn't understand that, oh, I wasn't sure how that worked. So we've got some work to do to educate our members of Congress on H.R. 3077 when we get to that point, and H.R. 16, 24, and 23 again, which are part of that legislation. So we'll be in full educational mode with those folks and try to get that pushed through next year in the House and the Senate. Now, the calendar will work against us a little bit next year because as we move into the spring, the late spring, and the early summer, the focus of most of the folks in Congress will turn to the midterms. And so we will be right along there, working as hard as we can. And I'm sure you're going to bring up SPAC at some point, Bob, in our conversation today about the midterm. So, but yeah, if by some chance we got 3076 passed and we're working on 3077, we'll work with our folks going to the Hill to have them educate our legislators on the importance of H.R. 3077.
Okay, before we talk about SPAC, one last legislative topic I'd like to talk about.
Right.
Sometime in early mid-February, the president is going to give his State of the Union address. Mm-hmm. By mid-February, we expect the president to propose his fiscal year 2023 budget, which could impact the Postal Service, its employees, and retirees. Mm-hmm. A late March legislative training seminar, which we have scheduled, provides the requisite time to digest the proposal and Congress's response to that proposal, or if they have any of their own proposals. Mm-hmm. How should our members, our delegates that come to Washington sort of address those issues?
Well, we'll have to look at it, see how it impacts postal operations, if at all, and certainly our retirees, federal retirees. So as you know, most budgets from presidents over the last several years, 8-10 years, probably have not just flown through the Congress and been passed. So there's always a lot of wrangling back and forth. So I would not expect there to be a lot of anti-retiree or anti-postal type of legislation in the president's budget. However, as you know, Bob, every year we fight off legislation to reduce benefits for federal employees, postal employees. Not had anything passed yet. We've been very successful working with our other partners in the Fed Postal Coalition and other stakeholders to push back on that. But it's always out there. We always have to be alert to it and aware of it. So we'll look through it. If there's things in there that impact our members, our EAS employees, we'll certainly promote the positive aspects of it and oppose the negative aspects of it.
Now let's turn our attention to SPAC a bit. As you referenced a bit earlier, the midterm elections that are coming up next year. We're within 11 months of those midterm elections. And in the House of Representatives, there's around a 8 or 9 vote Democratic majority right now. In the Senate, there's a 1-seat majority, and that's the vice president. As we look at political landscape right now, we could be looking at a potential landslide election, or we call wave election, in which the House Democrats could be swept out of power. And that's reflective of presidential approval numbers, which are in the mid-40s right now. We're looking at redistricting, where Republicans clearly have an advantage in many of the states, and potentially an enthusiasm gap. That is, usually the party out of power is more excited to sort of generate enthusiasm amongst their compatriots to get out to vote than those who are in power. How does SPAC play a role in protecting our interests in this type of political environment?
Right. So we're not political, okay? We promote an agenda, not a political point of view. So whether the Democrats run the House and the Senate, whether Republicans run the House and the Senate, we'll push our issues through because we think those are the right thing to do. So we meet, as you know, Bob, quite a bit with Republican members of Congress. We have a very good relationship with quite a few members of Congress on the Republican side. Our issues are bipartisan. This legislation, 3076, is a bipartisan piece of legislation. So it has a very good chance to pass. And there's wide bipartisan support of it. So however the midterms turn politically, our agenda will stay the same and our efforts will stay the same. Now, what does SPAC mean for that? Well, we have to make sure that the people we support and the people that get elected support our issues and postal issues. Now, there's a million issues out there that are important to a lot of people, and I understand that. The mission of SPAC is to support those candidates and those incumbents that will support NAPS and postal issues. So it's going to be very important for us this year to have enough SPAC war chest, so to speak, to find those folks that will continue to support our issues on a bipartisan basis. So that's what we're looking for. I'm not looking for the Democrat that supports an issue over Republicans. I'm going to take the one that supports the issue. That's what we do here, and we'll continue to do that here. So we need a large SPAC effort to make sure that our issues don't get lost in the shuffle. So that's why we're going to be rolling out here in January our Charging Into 2022 online raffle like we did last summer to raise money heading into LTS. We'll do some more SPAC fundraising at LTS. And we're going to have to find some new and other creative ways to gain money for SPAC. Because look, it's all about the message. And when we go to the Hill, Bob, and you know, and we meet with congressmen and senators, there's 1,000 other lobbyists there clamoring for time on their issues as well as we are. What's the driver of that? The driver of that is, do you have the financial wherewithal to find candidates that can support your issue? Because we ask them. We're not shy. Do you support this legislation? Do you want to see this legislation pass? Do you support postal issues? Do you support federal retiree issues? These are the things we want to know from these folks that are running for Congress, running for re-election to Congress. And we can't do that unless we have a large and strong SPAC war chest to carry into these midterms. These midterms may be the most critical midterms that our nation has gone through in a generation. So we have to be ready, and we're going to make the pitch to our members to be ready, to help us be ready, because really everything that we do on the Hill legislatively is driven by SPAC. It's the gasoline for the engine, and we got to have enough fuel to fuel that engine up and keep it running. So we're going to be promoting SPAC heavy, as we always have done, but we've been promoting SPAC heavier because this is a very critical year, 2022.
It's funny. I can recall the statement attributed to Jesse Unruh, who was the former Speaker of the California Assembly, who said money is the mother's milk of politics.
Right, absolutely. And sometimes I think we don't like saying that. I think we'd like to think that the discourse is based upon what's right and what's wrong. And in a perfect world, that would be wonderful. But unfortunately, that's not how it works. But you're right. So we need that money, and we're going to be asking all of our members to become more active in it and more get more involved in it. It's going to start. We're going to hit the ground running in January on that fundraising effort and keep it rolling through LTS and beyond so that we can have the wherewithal to be competitive and get our issues out in front of those folks running for re-election, those folks running for Congress.
Well, I want to thank you, Chuck, for joining me again for your monthly visit to NAPS Chat.
Absolutely. I enjoy it very much.
And I want to thank NAPS Chat listeners for logging on this week. If you enjoy NAPS Chat, please leave a positive review in the Apple Podcast Store. And more importantly, share NAPS Chat with your friends and colleagues. Till next time you log on, stay safe and healthy.
I'm going to sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you. I'm gonna